Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. And your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories. On Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls _ Pep.
People have their opinion.
What other falsehoods are out there?
A lot of the perception things about us.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
Rebuilds are difficult. Sometimes it takes years and years. I still believe, given a really good offseason with this draft pick that we have coming and with our ability to get some veteran players in here alongside these young guys, we can make a substantial leap.
Kick back, relax. Locked On Bulls starts now.
My job is to prepare the child for the road, not the road for the child. And these guys are men.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome to Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls _ Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. Drop all of your texts and all of your voicemails there. Matt got to the texts today, so I'm going to take all of your voicemails again, 331-979-1369, the place to do that. We're in the dead period of basketball right now. Obviously, as you guys can tell, we've been kind of all over the place with our episodes, but you guys have still been bringing us really, really good content, so I'm here to take all the voicemails that you guys dropped for us over the past week, 10 days or so. I just kind of clean up that voicemail line so you can continue to drop those, get your thoughts on the texts, the voicemail episodes, or any episodes we've released over the past couple of weeks. 331-979-1369. Let's jump into those voicemails, though. Let's get to the first one.
Hi, guys. This is Patrick. I have two thoughts, one non-Bulls related and one Bulls related. The first one being non-Bulls. This kind of goes back to Summer League, but I know going into the Summer League schedule, I was really excited to see Zion. And when I did, I was really taken back by how out of shape he was. And I was kind of surprised by how that wasn't really discussed at all. Like, to me, it was just swept under the rug. And, you know, he got hurt that first game, and he became kind of out of sight, out of mind. But to me, to be the number one pick and to be a player of all this hype, I mean, I felt like after the college season, he should have been working his ass off to be in the best shape of his life for the NBA. And clearly he hasn't. And to me, I would be concerned. As a Pelicans fan, though I'm not. Lastly, on the Bulls, how did you guys feel about Markkanen and Levine being able to consistently do what they did this past February going into next season? Like, I hope they can do what they did in that month for a whole entire season. Do you guys feel they can do that or no? But anyways, thank you guys, and have a good day. Bye.
Let's start with Zion Williamson first, and thanks for the call, Patrick. So Zion Williamson's weight has been talked about, I feel like, more than maybe you think. People talked about it at Duke, too, asking whether or not that the weight was going to be a problem once he went to the NBA and not being as quick, not being as dominant, and having such large size on a guy that's going to play essentially a wing position for you. How much is that going to cause injuries? Can they transform his body from having a little bit of this excess weight and turn that into muscle? I found an interesting quote, though, from Zion Williamson going back February 20th, 2019 from Sports Illustrated. It was talking about his weight from high school and how much he had gained there, and it was kind of a surprise to him. So from his freshman year of high school, he was 6'3", 175 pounds. He said in 2 years, going from his freshman year to his junior year, he gained over 100 pounds. He said he stepped on the scale and he was 255. So that's pretty crazy, being a junior in high school, being 6'3", 255. So What's interesting in high school is he said he didn't feel like he was 250. Like, he still felt like he was moving as fast as he was when he was 175 pounds. I mean, the dude that's closest to him in weight and size would be LeBron James. And even Zion Williamson, I think, has about 15 pounds on LeBron James easy. So I think it's going to be something that the Pelicans training staff is going to definitely work on. We talk about this with guys that come into the league that are too skinny, that are trying to add weight. It can be the same effect for Zion Williamson, him just losing weight, turning some of that excess fat into muscle, and being able to just stay in shape. I think going from Duke's program, which I'm sure has a great training program, to the NBA is still a whole nother step above. And I'm sure he's going to have the best training staff of all time, personal trainers, chefs, anything he needs to stay in shape. I'm sure the Pelicans organization or any other sponsor he has is going to make sure he has it. So I said I wouldn't be too concerned about it. I think 3 years from now, if we still see Zion Williamson in the same shape he is right now, at 285, 6'3", then maybe there's a little bit of concern, but still, we haven't even seen him play a full game yet in the NBA. So let's just kind of be patient, same way we were patient with guys like Giannis, who came in and was like a stick figure. And look at the way he's transformed his body. So I think we can do this with the opposite effect to some of these guys. Maybe it's just a little bit tougher. So we'll find out. Bulls question, though, Patrick. Do I think Lauri Markkanen and Zach LaVine can play consistently the same way that they did in February? I think they can. I think it starts with guys like Otto Porter, though. The schedule, again, we have to preface this with, the schedule was kind of weak. The Bulls had a ton of time off before returning. February is a weird time, too, where teams kind of let off the gas a little bit. You see teams, a lot of teams that know that they're out of the playoffs trying new things. So take it with a little bit of grain of salt, but still, I think it starts with Otto Porter Jr. If he can stay healthy and be what he was last year, obviously he's not going to shoot 76% true shooting percentage, something ridiculous like he did in the 15 games he played with the Bulls. But still, I think it starts with Otto Porter Jr. and see how quickly they can mesh with those point guards too. Who's going to be that guy that's going to fit in there? Kind of need that fourth solidified piece. And it's going to be about how Lauri Markkanen is going to be able to be aggressive too. I mean, we can't wait 2 months for Lowry to decide to all of a sudden turn it on. I'm hoping he turns it on from day one, opening night. And same thing with Zach LaVine. Hopefully he realizes that what he was doing in February, distributing the ball and knowing that he'll get his points when he can, and understanding he's got shooters around him, hopefully that is sparked from day one as well. But I think there's still going to be some growing pains the first couple of months. But if they all can stay on the floor healthy together, I think that there's some consistency levels there from February, and it'll be about Jim Boylan and how he uses these guys too. So there's a lot of factors in it, but yes, that glimpse that we did see in February, I think, can be consistent, if not this season, maybe towards the back end of the season again. But it's going to take some time for the point guards and also Wendell Carter Jr. to kind of get comfortable with this entire starting lineup. It'll be interesting to see what Jim Boylan does with this entire group too. So thanks for the call.
Yo, Jordan and Matt, what's going on? This is Kevin here, calling in from New York, originally from the suburbs of Chicago. Love the show. Thanks for reading my text. I sent you guys the one about Steve Kerr and Kirk Heinrich. But I just wanted to ask a quick one. It's kind of slow right now, and I've been wanting to ask you guys this for a while. I feel like it's a good time. But we're always talking about, you know, today's NBA and the modern NBA and developing the Bulls into this young core, into a fast team, and to fit the style of today's NBA. Do you guys think that that's, you know, is there a tomorrow's NBA, and what is that? I do think it's going to be like this for a while, but, you know, if it's going to change, when do you guys think it will? And what do you think that'll be? Because, you know, I think about during the broadcast last year, Stacey King was always theorizing. He's always saying to Neil, you know, I don't think this is going to last long. I think it's going to go back to a traditional game. I don't know. I'm just kind of curious, because if that is the case, I know some people have made cases for Jim Boylan in that sense, given his kind of old school style. So anyway, love the show, guys. Curious what you think. And yeah, go Bulls.
This is an interesting one. So what's going to be the next modern day NBA? So like the 90s switched over to playing back to the basket, very physical basketball, to a game where we see a lot of three-pointers now, a lot of offense, less defense. Where do I see it? Probably in 10 years. The first thing that sparked my mind was every guy at every position is going to be 6'5", 6'6", or above. I mean, you're going to see dudes that are 6'9", 6'10", playing the 4 and the 5 all the time now. It's not even going to be a joke. You're probably going to see the point guard position be a position where you see dudes as 6'8", 6'9", 6'10", start playing point guard. I think we're going to get to a point where we eliminate calling these guys in positions at all. I mean, maybe outside of the center, if you get a big dude that's 7'2", 7'3", a handful of those guys, maybe you still call them centers, but I think we're really going to go to guards, wings, and centers if we haven't already. I feel like that transition's happening right now, but maybe we could even take it that one step further where they just eliminate positions altogether, and it's just five dudes out in the court, and you're drawing up schemes and putting guys in different spots on the floor as opposed to saying, hey, you're playing point guard here. You're the guy that traditionally handles the ball. I think maybe that gets all thrown out the window if every guy kind of has the same body type, is able to play both sides of the ball, are able to step out and shoot a three, able to drive to the basket. So I think you see it right now at AAU. You see it in college basketball. You see it in high school basketball. These dudes are the most athletic we've ever seen at such a young age, which is ridiculous. So I think that's what first is going to be the change. Now, how does the game end up changing? Will they change a rule? Will they add a four-point line? Will they put the rim up another foot? Instead of having 10-foot rims, will they go to 11-foot rims? They're going to probably have to do something at some point because these games and these dudes are just so athletic that I think there's another challenge to have there. Now, what that is, I'm not really sure. So I think adding a 4-point line would be intriguing. Would it get kind of messy? Probably. How would that change and alter all of the stats prior to when? So if they make a big rule change like that, I feel like there's a lot more that goes into it. So how the NBA changes, I think in 10 years, you'll see dudes that we see traditionally playing the three and the four, guys like Kevin Durant, LeBron James, see him at positions like the point guard. And I think we're going to eliminate talking about positions like point guard, shooting guard, small forward, power forward, and center. I think we've already kind of gotten away from that, but I think maybe 10 years down the road, we're not even going to be talking about actual positions 1 through 5. So interesting theory and interesting question. I want to get our listeners' thoughts on this one because I think this is really interesting. Where do you guys see the NBA going? What's the next modern NBA? Is it going to be something like I was talking about, extremely positionless basketball and dudes that are playing the 3, 4, and 5 can end up playing the 1 and the 2? Or is it going to be go back to traditional basketball, kind of like Kevin was talking about, where the shooting's not going to last? Coaches are going to adjust to this. They're going to adjust their defenses over time and be able to stop all of this three-point shooting. So what's it going to be now? Is it going to switch back? Or is there something new that's on your mind that you kind of thought about this? So drop us at 331-979-1369. Thanks for the call, Kevin.
Hi, guys. Eddie V from the South Side here. I actually wanted to bring something up to you guys and see what, you know, if in any way it kind of can relate. Because I was listening to, you know, Cast Considerations and you guys, and the argument was just kind of made of where Coby White kind of like fits into minutes coming this upcoming season. And I'm on board with more with the idea of them having him take a back seat and playing, you know, some minutes, but not a whole lot. For two main reasons. One being, you know, what Matt was saying as to if they really are trying to make a push for the playoffs and get as many wins as possible, then obviously you're gonna wanna have Satoransky as your starting point guard, and maybe, you know, whether it be, you know, Coby or Archie or someone else taking those backup minutes to kind of shore up the second unit. And on top of that, I kinda wanna direct to like what the Blazers kind of did or are doing with Anthony Simmons. You know, they're not really playing him at all. They didn't play him at all last year. They played him during like garbage time. You know, he played in the G League. And, you know, from what I've heard, there's people saying that Anthony Simmons could very well end up being an all-star, and they have confidence that he'll be an all-star. And they're, I mean, the Blazers are obviously a pretty well-rounded organization, and they have, you know, they obviously know what they're doing when it comes to developing talent. And I was wondering whether you guys think that it would be better to keep Coby on the back end of everything for at least 1 or 2 years and not try to rush things versus, you know, what the fan base wants, usually having him, you know, thrown out there and just playing games and learning as you go along. And, you know, like I said, I just want to see what you guys think of what you would think would be better for his development. And, you know, for the future. So, yeah, you know, thanks for taking my call, guys. Hope to hear What do you guys think? Later.
Hey, thanks for the call, Eddie. So comparing Portland and Chicago situations really quick, I know where you're going with this. Anfernee Simons, right? Kid that was drafted in 2018 out of high school, out of IMG Academy, ranked, I think, the eighth prospect in the 2018 recruiting class. Yeah, eighth. Eighth recruiting in the recruiting class, number one among guards in 2018. I was just looking at what Kobe White was prior to going to North Carolina. Kobe White was an All-American too, and he was number three in the country among shooting guards. He was number three in North Carolina overall and the number 25th prospect in the nation. But similar to what Anfernee Simons in Portland did was they sent him to the G League pretty much for the entire season, said, you know what, go down there. We're going to teach you a lot. We're going to let you learn. And side note here, I feel like this is what they're going to do with Daniel Gafford. But I'll get back to that in a second. It's interesting how they do develop their players, though. Portland does. They allow these guys to have a lot of time before they just kind of rush them in there. And I think that's a good idea sometimes. It depends on where the coaching staff, and also, too, you have to consider John Paxson and Doug Collins and all of these other guys, too, that have a voice, where they feel like Kobe White is right now and where he can develop in a year or 2 years. I think Matt's right. If they're trying to win games, especially if that first 30 games of the schedule, if the Bulls are, say, 20-10 or 15-15, they go 500 in those first 30 games, they're going to still be looking to try and make the playoffs. Now, Kobe White can be a part of that. I think a lot of it's going to be come down to competition and showing what he can do. So I think Jim Boylan and John Paxson have that same philosophy where they're like, we're not going to just hand you minutes just because you're the number seven overall pick this past year. You have to earn those minutes, especially with the amount of guards that the Bulls have now. Like, Chris Dunn isn't going anywhere, it seems like. At least for right now, he's not. They re-signed Ryan Arcidiacono, re-signed Shaq Harrison. They got Thomas Satoransky. So you have a whole collection of guards he's going to have to beat out for playing time, especially as a rookie, that can be difficult. So I'm interested to see what Jim Boylan does, if he puts him out there regardless of how his training camp looks, if he still looks like a young buck and needs some time to develop. I wonder if they're going to play with the idea of still giving him some minutes here and there. But I wouldn't be surprised if the first half of the season you only see Kobe White averaging 15 minutes a night, maybe. And I don't think that's a bad thing either. Develop this guy slowly. We have to remember, too, Kobe White's going to be 19 when the season starts. So he still has a lot of development to do. He's different than Wendell Carter Jr. was. And even look at Wendell Carter, as skilled and as smart as he is, how much he struggled in the 44 games that he played in. So I think it's just going to take some time. And I think you're right. I think bringing him along slowly and doing it kind of like Portland, maybe not to the extent of sending Kobe White down to play in the G League, but that could certainly happen too, to get some reps in and stay warm if he is really out of the rotation. That I can't really see, but it's a possibility still. But yeah, developing him slowly and not forcing him to play 30 minutes a night, and, you know, even if he's struggling, let him work through some of those struggles. I think it's going to take some time, though. So yeah, working him into the rotation slowly, and depending on what they do with Chris Dunn, I think can open up some minutes for him too. But Satoransky, Dunn, Ryan Arcidiacono, I think you're going to be the three guys that get the bulk of the minutes. Kobe White, though, I still feel like first 30, 40 games of the season will probably average around 15 minutes or so, which isn't that bad. Those are the realistic expectations for Kobe White. Now, certainly he can come into training camp and absolutely light it up, beat out guys like Shaq Harrison, Ryan Arcidiacono, and maybe even Chris Dunn to be kind of the backup. I would be surprised if that happened just because of what we saw in Summer League, but we did see flashes of really, really, really good skills from Kobe White. The no-look passes, the three-quarter court passes, the ability to shoot. I mean, he did struggle from three, but ability to attack the basket. Jim Boylan loves that. Look at what he did with Zach LaVine in a year. So if Kobe White comes out, plays aggressive, looks like he's a smart player, and can beat out some of these guys, maybe we do get surprised at the end of training camp and he's getting more minutes than we think. But I think realistic expectations are Satoransky, Dunn, Arcidiacono are going to get the bulk of the minutes, and you'll see Kobe White and Shaq Harrison kind of split time filling in the gaps there. And I wouldn't even be surprised if Jim Boylan tried to experiment with him at the two. Like, if Denzel Valentine misses any type of time, you're going to need to have some of those guards kind of shift over. So who else is going to play the two behind him? So you've got some wiggle room here, and history tells us the Bulls haven't had a healthy season in how long. So there's going to be times where they're going to need Kobe White. So I wouldn't be too concerned, but yes, I totally think you're spot on, Eddie, with developing him slowly and not having to push him out there unless he shows us that he's ready to play a bulk of those minutes. But I would be very surprised, even early on in the season, to see that happen. But he's got a tremendous skill, and let's not push things. And we saw, again, go back to Wendell Carter Jr. last year, and even Chandler Hutchison early on. Those guys looked kind of lost. Where they were picked and what we thought about them and what they were going to do in their first year. So hopefully with some skill training, with the ability to learn from a few of these other guys around him, the winning mentality, the basketball IQ being high in Coby White helps spark something. So that's where I'll leave it.
Hey, guys, this is Dave from Denver. Just want to thank you guys for answering my question this past week in the mailbag about the Supermax. Really enjoyed hearing you guys' thoughts on that. And I think throughout the next couple of weeks, I'll probably call in with some other questions regarding salary cap maxes, super maxes, stuff like that. So today I wanted to get your thoughts on Lauri Markkanen. So we've seen a couple players this summer sign, like after their third year in the league, we saw this happen with Jamal Murray and with Ben Simmons, how they're taking their fourth-year rookie option, or I guess the team option, and then they're already agreeing to a max, which I'm not really sure like how all this works and if that ends up saving the team max money or salary money because they're agreeing to it earlier, not after their fourth year in the league. But anyways, besides the point, I wanted to get your thoughts and see, do you think we're going to be offering Markkanen that same extension and picking up his team option next summer where we pick it up and then we already give him a max extension after that? I'm a little bit worried because it seems like the Bulls do like to nickel and dime sometimes. We saw that kind of happen with Bobby, although that probably worked out for the best. But did they do this with Derrick Rose? I don't really remember. But anyways, would love to hear you guys' thoughts on that. And, I mean, I think he should be averaging, if he takes another step this year, he'll be averaging over 20 points a game, shooting 43% from three, and I think he would be worth that money for what players like that are getting paid right now. So thanks again for your time, guys, and go Bulls.
Hey, thanks, Dave. This question I love because it started to make me think how this Bulls team's going to be shaped in 3 or 4 years. So thinking real quick about the guys that signed extensions before their rookie contract were up just this offseason, the two notables are Jamal Murray and Ben Simmons. Those two guys signed their contracts for, Ben Simmons was 5 years, 25% of the maximum salary. His projected value is $169 million. Starting salary can be worth up to 30% of the cap if Simmons earns an all-star NBA honor in 2020. So he can get a kicker there by being an all-star in this upcoming season. It includes a 15% trade kicker starts in 2020-2021. So these deals are negotiated 1 year before the final year. Yeah, the final year of the rookie contract. Same thing with Jamal Murray, 5 years, 25% of the max salary, projected value of $169 million. Same thing, salary starting can be up to 30% of the cap if Murray earns all-star NBA honors this upcoming season. And that starts at the same time as Ben Simmons. So I'm looking at Lauri Markkanen's, where that final year of his contract runs out and where the Bulls would have to kind of make this decision. So it would be after next season, after 2020-2021, would he be going into his final year of his rookie scale contract? This lines up with the expiration of the CBA as well. So keep that in mind too, because I think it's interesting with all of these veterans signing big time deals, extensions with their own teams. I wonder if they're kind of worried about where this CBA is going and whether or not there's going to be a lockout or not, because there's still talks about they could be really, really far off from each other. There might not be an agreement come 2022-23 where they can, there's a rule in place where they can essentially break apart the CBA agreement 1 year early. So that would be at the end of the 2022-23 season. So we're looking at, what, 4 seasons from now at that end of there. So I think that's why we are seeing a lot of veterans still kind of lock themselves up while they can get the money. I think this would be advantageous for the Bulls, but it depends on what Lauri Markkanen does over the next 2 years. I think this year is going to be more critical than ever to kind of tell, is he going to go to the left and continue to rise up and potentially be an all-star? Or is he going to go to the right and still play somewhat like he did over the first 2 years, maybe see a little bit of development in him, but still have a lot of concerns about what his game is and if he's really worth a max contract coming off of this rookie scale deal. You brought up Derrick Rose really quick. I don't think I could be wrong about this and I didn't go back and dig, but the one that jumps up to me with contract negotiations is Jimmy Butler, where they told him, hey, you know what, maybe we'll just stick you out there and make you play and make you worth signing that extension. They did, and Jimmy Butler ended up hitting on that and making more money than what the Bulls originally offered him. So it can work out in both ways. It could work out in the Bulls' favor and he doesn't play as well and they can offer him less money, or it could go the opposite way. They say go out there and play and then he could test the market coming off of his rookie scale deal and say, you know what, I'm gonna go sign a max extension somewhere else because you guys didn't want to get this deal done a year prior. So there's a lot of different avenues. Do I see the Bulls doing this? If Lauri Markkanen continues to play the way he does and he develops the way we think he's going to over the next couple of seasons, yes, I think it'll be good for them to try and get a deal done as soon as possible. I don't think they, side note on this, I don't think they really nickeled and dimed Bobby Portis either, because the rumor was that he was offered a 4-year, 50-some million dollar contract, somewhere between $50 and $54 million, and he wanted $60 million. So it was a matter of $66 million that ended up working out for the Bulls that they didn't re-sign him because they ended up getting Otto Porter instead. So Bulls in contract extensions and contract negotiations, the history has told us over the last, 10 years that it hasn't been great. There's been a lot more negatives than there has been positives. So, but if I had to make a guess here, an educated guess, I would say yes, that the Bulls are on a path to sign Lauri Markkanen, if not to a max extension, something near that, find a way to get him on a second contract before his rookie extension comes up and then he's able to hit free agency. So I think they'll get that deal done if Lauri stays healthy and continues to develop the way that we think he's going to. I do think, though, last note on this, I do think that the CBA plays a factor into this, not just for veteran stars, but also for these rookie guys, too, because if the CBA, if there's a lockout of any kind at the end of the 2023 season, I mean, guys want to be locked up. They want to have their money. They want to know that they're secure. And guys entering and testing free agency, they might not know what's going to be agreed to in the next CBA and how that's going to affect their money. They know that they can get their big time bucks right now, so they're going to, especially some of these veteran guys who know this might be their last chance to get a max type of deal. Guys like Damian Lillard, who I believe is 28, 29 years old. Guys like CJ McCollum, Draymond Green. All of these guys have locked themselves up to start a contract that would run through the next renewed CBA contract that would be agreed to. So I don't know. I don't know how it's going to change and whether or not the salary cap is going to continue to go up. We think it's going to. So that would be a plus for the Bulls as well, as you could get them on a cheaper deal when you agree to one maybe a year, 2 years prior. If that cap continues to go up, Lowry's going to continue to earn more money the longer you wait on signing him to an extension. So a lot of things not necessarily to worry about right now, but it is interesting to think about 2-3 years down the road. And, you know, Zach LaVine's contract comes up at the end of the 2021-22 season, and that's Lowry's last year of his rookie extension, too. So Wendell Carter Jr. is a year after that. He'll be off his rookie deal in 2022-23. So the Bulls have a little bit of time to see what they have in all of these young guys, but they also, too, if you think about it on the flip side, only have, what, 2 real seasons to figure out what this core team is and where it can take you. That is to re-sign these guys, start over, pick and choose who you really want to be around for that next deal, because you have all these guys on relatively cheap contracts, but you need to find out where you want to spend your money come those second contracts. Zach LaVine is included in this, too, because he kind of lines up with Wendell Carter Jr., Lauri Markkanen. Kobe White will be a little bit after him, but still, it lines up with 3 guys that you're projecting to have to pay. And consider Otto Porter Jr. too, if he continues to play well for the next 2 seasons. If the Bulls want to keep him around, it's not going to cost them $27 million a year, but it's still going to cost them a decent chunk of money if he plays the way he did in the 15 games he played with the Bulls. That still remains to be seen, but all of those things you have to think about. Four players that we project to make pretty decent chunk of change. How they're going to want to spend that, it's going to come down to development, and it's going to come down to see who plays better than the others. Carter, Markkanen, Porter, and Levine. And that also consider, too, the fact that they could go out and spend and sign a guy to a max contract at the end of the 2021 season, where a lot of those free agents are going to be there. The auto money's going to be freed up. So that could put a wrinkle in how they re-sign Carter, how they re-sign Markkanen. But the good thing is the Bulls can go over the luxury tax if they wanted to. Say the Bulls are pretty good. They're on the cusp of getting ready to really, really compete in this East. And they like Lowry and they like Carter. And they decide to go over and spend the luxury tax and sign both of those guys. So that's the good thing about that is the Bulls have the option to re-sign their own guys and go over the luxury tax. So we'll see. That's a lot of future talk for me, but interesting to think about. So thanks for the call.
Hey, man, Jordan. It's Alex again calling from Melbourne, Australia. I got a question relating to not just the Bulls but about the whole league. What do you guys think of when teams change to wearing white jerseys on the road? My friends and I pointed this out last season, and to be honest, I'm not really a fan of it. It just looks weird, am I right? Like, for example, when the Bulls play the Lakers on the road in the Staples Center, I want to see the signature sea red jersey popping out against the home team. I don't know. These are the dog days in the NBA, so let me know what you guys think. Love the show, and keep up the good work. Go Bulls!
I'm glad someone said it. Thank you, Alex. It is weird. It is weird that away teams are wearing white now. I know the jerseys across the board, there's a million alternates, especially depending on the team, that it could be any color on any night. I get that, but for the Bulls specifically, seeing whites on the road now is a bit odd, but maybe this is a marketing play for the Bulls, that they want fans to be able to see the Bulls in their red uniforms at home the most. That's like the iconic signature jersey, right? The red one, and you want your fans to be able to see that as much as possible. I think it's just a change. It's just kind of weird. But if there's anything I can push for over the next couple of seasons, and we still haven't seen what the Bulls' new City Edition jerseys are going to look like, I'm excited. Low-key, I think that there's a conspiracy theory out there that they could potentially bring back the pinstripe uniforms. I believe it's 20 years this season that the Bulls won their last championship during that. Yeah, it was 20 years from this season. So with them lining up with the All-Star game too, and they haven't really worn those jerseys since, maybe they bring back the pinstripe, bring back the black jerseys with the pinstripes. That's all our fans are asking. You would sell hundreds of millions of jerseys. You would. You would sell a shitload of jerseys if you brought those back as your alternates for 1 year. Look, the City of jerseys last year were amazing. Loved those jerseys. But bring back the red pinstripe, black jerseys in honor of 20 years of the final championship on that dynasty run. Bring those back, especially with the All-Star game coming up. But I'm with you. I think it is a bit bizarre to see the Bulls wearing white on the road, especially that Lakers game. That Lakers game was weird. But I think it is. It's all about putting it in the home fans' perspective, and a marketing play is getting Bulls fans to be able to see that red night in and night out at the United Center, as opposed to having to only be able to see it when you're at a road game or you're watching it on TV. So I just think it's a weird transition, but hey, 3 years from now, we're going to be like, wait, the Bulls wore white at home? Like, younger fans are going to be like, wait, the Bulls wore white at home at one time? But yeah, that's my play too, is bring back pinstriped red jerseys. Please. Please. Actually, I'm going to make a promise to our fans out there. The Bulls, if they bring back those pinstriped red jerseys with the black, sometime this season, we will give away five jerseys. We will give five of those away. We'll give the whole entire starting five away. One to each one of our listeners, and we'll run a contest. So if the Bulls release those as their City Edition jerseys, you can promise it. You can timestamp it August 8th. 2019, Jordan promised us five giveaways, five jerseys. And by the way, we're going to do some giveaways over the next few weeks or so. So stay tuned for that. But I promise that five jerseys if they bring back the red pinstripe with the black jerseys. Those are my absolute favorite. Let's get to our last voicemail of the day. Just want to remind you guys real quick that the Locked On Podcast Network is your team every single day. We've got podcasts for over 100 different teams, with college football starting soon, with the NFL starting up here. Hard Knocks, first episode of Hard Knocks this week. Make sure you are subscribed not only to Locked On Bears. For all those Bears fans out there, Lauren Cox does a great job. The Cubs season is in full swing. They're still battling to find out if they're going to make the playoffs or not. So follow Locked On Cubs as well as all of our college football coverage every single day, 5 days a week. So make sure you are subscribed not only to Locked On Bulls, but to all of the other shows across all of the other leagues. Locked On Podcast Network is your team every day. Let's hit that last voicemail.
Yo, what's up, guys? Hope y'all saw Carmelo Anthony drop his off-season bomb. Mainly talk about the Rockets, funny deal. But this guy was almost a bull. How about that? Like, is this was that the season that Derrick Rose and LeBron James hit those game-winning shots? Because if that was that season and we had Melo, I feel like NBA complexion would be changed right now. Because that's seriously like a whole lot different with Melo. Because even if, like, we had Jimmy and Rose was injury prone and Melo was kind of injury prone back then. Load management. Like, they could have did that year with Jimmy, and we had a bench behind us. That could have definitely been a team that could have won the championship. Get you guys' opinion on this one.
Thanks for the call, Darian. As always, love to hear from Darian. Let me play the Carmelo clip for those. You probably, 95% of you probably have heard this, but if you're picking this episode up and still haven't heard that full clip, you've seen or read things about what Carmelo said but didn't hear it, here it is right now.
The New York Knicks situation, I was going to Chicago. Derrick Rose, Joakim Noah, Jim, I was there, right? I was there. And then I started getting whispers behind the scenes. Yo, look, this person ain't gonna be there. It ain't really right. This and that. And it was all of that started to come up in the midst of my decision making.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't gonna let anything cloud that.
So a couple interesting things with Carmelo here. So one is he said that he was ready to go to Chicago in 2014. I get that. It was close. You know, and a lot of people wanted to blame Derrick Rose as being the guy that never recruited Carmelo in that infamous dinner where Derrick Rose didn't show up and wasn't going to go have and sit down with dinner with Carmelo. But still, beyond that, like, beyond the comments about Derrick Rose not wanting to recruit, which I feel like my opinion has changed on that. I thought before that he was a guy that didn't really care about recruiting, wanted to win with his own guys. But it sounds like that wasn't the case. Consider the things that Derrick Rose said in his documentary that came out in April from Stadium. Talked about how that wasn't true, that he still did want to bring guys in, but felt like he didn't want to jab or sly the guys that he had around him already, who he felt like he could win with. So consider that for a second. Also, too, it's interesting that Carmelo Anthony says that he heard some whispers going around that this isn't right, the situation isn't right, these guys aren't going to be here for that long. Thinking about that in 2019 kind of makes a little bit of sense. But let's not forget that the Bulls didn't have the money Carmelo wanted in 2014. So do I believe that Carmelo probably heard some things that were like, I don't know what's going on with this team, especially if you don't sign there. What are they going to be in a couple of years? Will Jimmy be around? Will Derrick Rose still be around? Will Joakim Noah still be the same player he was? Tom Thibodeau, too. It's highly noted that Tom Thibodeau loves Carmelo Anthony, loved him as a player, and wanted him desperately. Will Tom Thibodeau still be there? So think about that, but let's go back to the money for a second. The Bulls couldn't offer him the same amount of money that the Knicks offered him. $50 million less than what the Knicks offered him. Carmelo signed a five-year, $124 million deal in 2014 with the Knicks. The Bulls would have offered him something like either 4 or 5 years at $75 or $80 million. He took the money and decided he wanted to stay in New York, still playing as almost a max player. It was like a couple million less per year to consider him a max, but it was basically a max contract at that time. He chose to go back to the Knicks as opposed to going to the Bulls. Do I think he made that choice because of money as opposed to what he was hearing around the Bulls? Absolutely. Do I feel like it influenced and pushed him and said, you know what? if everything was sparkly and clean and all I heard was good reviews about the Bulls, then maybe I would really, really, really consider this. And maybe I'm willing to give up that money because I'm making hand over fist in endorsements and I can make it up somewhere else. But maybe this influenced him a little bit more and said, why go to a team, take less money, and also deal with an entire headache? Now that we look hindsight, the Knicks and him didn't work out with that last contract. Things got sour at the end, and Carmelo's career has kind of dissipated over the last 2 years. But do I believe that there was a strong influence the way he's saying on First Take that that's ultimately the tipping point to get him to go back to New York? Absolutely not. He went to Lala and said, hey, would you be cool with me not being here for the next 8 months of the season while I go play in Chicago? And by the way, I'm going to make $50 million less. Oh, yeah, too. This is going to be a 4 or 5 year thing. So I won't be home for 8 or 9 months out of the season for the next 4 years, at least home consistently. To me, it's a no brainer. Stay in New York. Stay where you played college basketball at Syracuse, just outside of New York. Where you play most of your career in New York, you wanted to be here, you're going to get paid the most, so why not just stay? So that makes sense. From the Bulls' perspective, I wonder if this was the start of the end for Tom Thibodeau, too. Like not getting the player he wanted, also not getting the guys in 2010 tip the scale. I think this would have been a situation had Carmelo signed in 2014. Tom Thibodeau probably still around in 2019, 2018, at least. Fred Hoiberg's never even considered as a head coach for the Bulls. I think Tom Thibodeau stays around completely. The one that I'm curious about, Nick Friedell brought this up in a 2016 article when Carmelo returned and played the Bulls at the United Center. It was talking about what if Carmelo had signed with the Bulls? And he makes an interesting point. It was like, you also have to consider, too, would Jimmy Butler have turned into the all-star swingman that he was? Or would he just be kind of that defensive specialist that he was at the time at 2014? We saw a lot of really good things from Jimmy Butler, but he wasn't an all-star type of player yet. He blossomed because there was nobody to fill that hole, a la Carmelo Anthony was supposed to be that guy. So does he turn out to be the player that he was? Would the Bulls have signed Pau Gasol on top of Carmelo Anthony? Think about it. Pau Gasol had probably his best season, what, his first or second year with the Bulls? He was an all-star at 35 years old. I know they signed him to a small deal and they could have made things a little bit creative, but still, would he have been as willing to sign here? The Bulls say that they could have got the deal done had Melo signed, that they would have been able to sign both of those guys. But a lot of different factors. And Carmelo Anthony had a lot of injury problems in that first year he signed that deal with the Knicks. He ended up having surgery in 2014, the 2014-2015 season. I know playing hindsight, it would have been like, yes, they would have been an automatic contender. But a lot of this had to go right. Jimmy Butler still had to be the same player and continue to progress the way he did without Melo there. Derrick Rose, he would have had to stay healthy. Carmelo would have had to stay healthy. Would Pau Gasol be the same player? Would he have been the all-star playing at that high level that he did for those 2 seasons he was here with the Bulls? Would he have been the same player? I don't know. Would Joakim Noah played at the same consistent level and not been injury prone? Maybe. If all of those guys stay healthy in a perfect world, the Bulls sign Melo and they sign Pau Gasol for 2 years, yes, I definitely think that they could have been a contender. They probably would have made it to an Eastern Conference Finals. Would they have made it to a Finals? I don't know. It's hard to say trying to get past that LeBron team. And I get it. The Bulls were up at one point. They were up 2-1 in a series against that LeBron-led Cavs team. Would Carmelo have been enough? Not sure. Not sure that I believe everything that Carmelo was saying there, that it was ultimately some whispers that he was hearing. Now, the interesting part of this is, who were those whispers from? Was it players? Was it guys that he was friends with on the Bulls? Was he friends with anybody that he was talking to, saying, hey, what's going on here? Carlos Boozer was still here. Pau Gasol was signed here. Derrick Rose, Jimmy Butler, Joakim Noah. Did Carmelo reach out to any of those guys and get the whispers from them? I don't know if that might be the case. Maybe it was Tom Thibodeau. Maybe Carmelo reached out to Tom Thibodeau and said, hey, I don't know if any of these guys are going to be here, especially if you sign. If you sign, probably, but with the situation going on right now, I don't know. So who do you think might have been the person to say, hey, you know what, I don't know if Chicago's the best situation for you right now? Who is the guy whispering in Melo's ear like he says on First Take with Stephen A. just a week ago? If you have any thoughts on that, hit us up at 331-979-1369. I know there's been a lot of Carmelo talk. Matt got his opinions out of the last couple of days. I wanted to give you guys my quick thought. I think it was still ultimately about the money, and the Bulls didn't have the money. And I think Melo ultimately wanted to take the money and the comfortability of staying in New York, not having to uproot his entire family and move to Chicago and take $50 million less, as opposed to just hearing some rumors about what was going on with this Bulls team. Turned out to be true, though. Did it? Did it not? Team blew up in a matter of 2 years. They brought the three alphas in for an experiment for a year. That was completely blown up. So in three seasons, Pau Gasol was gone, Carlos Boozer was gone, Joakim Noah, Derrick Rose, Jimmy Butler, Dwayne Wade, Rajon Rondo. All of those guys that came in here or were here for an extended period of time were ultimately gone. The Bulls blew it up by the summer of 2017. 3 years' time can change a lot. So it's interesting that Melo would bring that up, and maybe that's just for him to redirect the thinking and not think, hey, you know what, maybe it was that $50 million. I don't know. That's my opinion, though. Hit us up with yours, though, 331-979-1369. That's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Thank you so much for listening to Locked On Bulls every single day, especially in this dead period of the NBA season. You can see it by just if you log onto Twitter for 5 minutes, check out NBA Twitter. We're arguing over the dumbest things right now. But that's August. That's August and the start of September. Maybe when we get the FIBA World Cup to start up at the last day of August. I think it's August 31st is the first day of that tournament. Maybe we'll actually start to focus on a little bit of basketball conversation instead of nonsense. But thanks for hanging out with us here at Locked On Bulls and continuing to listen all year long. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley, Bulls Nation. Have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Follow Locked On Bulls on social media, on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls_Peck, and on Facebook at facebook.com/LockedOnChiBulls. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com